Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
First, we will corner the market in California.
Then the entire country.
But in order to do so, we need bongs, ports, and trucks, and we need Manny and Corky's muscle to make sure the construction sites are only using our stuff.
Excuse me, we've got this room for like another hour, please.
Jesus.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast covering the latest and greatest on streaming. I'm David Chen.
I'm Siddhant Adlaka.
Welcome to the podcast. On today's edition of This Week in Streaming, we're going to be covering Barry Season 4, Episodes 1 and 2. That's Barry Season 4, Episodes 1 and 2, Episode 1 entitled Yikes, Episode 2 entitled Bestest Place on Earth. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram at decodingtv. We're broadcasting live right now at youtube.com/decodingtv. We may read off people's questions and comments. And if you want to be included in that, be sure to subscribe to us at youtube.com/decodingtv as well. For those of you who are just tuning into this for the first time, what we do here on This Week is Streaming is there's a bunch of TV shows that are amazing, that are awesome, but that it doesn't quite make sense to do a week-by-week recap for. So on This Week in Streaming, we cover the beginnings of shows when they premiere. We also cover the endings of shows, do a season overview. So that's what we're going to be doing with Barry. We're covering the first two episodes. We'll be back later to cover the entire season four. I believe there's going to be 8 episodes of Barry season four, and I believe all of them are directed by Bill Hader, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, and that is it. We've really been excited to cover Beef here on This Week in Streaming. Be sure to check out those episodes that Siddhant and I did at podcast.decodingtv.com and also on youtube.com/decodingtv. But let's get into Barry. Siddhant, are you excited for Barry to come back for season four? What were your thoughts like going into this episode?
Oh, man. I am one of the people who thought that Barry season 3 was sort of a high watermark for modern television, and especially the episodes directed by Bill Hader. So seeing that he was not only back directing more, but directing the whole season was incredibly exciting to me. And I think where the previous season left off, it sort of left things in a very unpredictable place. And yeah, there was no way to really anticipate what the season was going to be other than the very basic premise of, you know, where Barry is. And I'm sure we can, you know, spoil, especially because it's been in the marketing. He's in prison. Yeah, and so I was excited to see what the show and what Hader, the director, and Hader, the actor, would do with this, like, I guess, a sort of fresh scenario in which Barry, the character, seems to be just having a near complete break from reality, which is always nice.
Indeed. I was very excited as well. A lot of really incredible filmmaking in Barry season 3. So let's dive into it. As Siddhant mentioned, we are going to be spoiling episodes 1 and 2. We're not going to spoil anything from future episodes of Barry. That includes anything on the next time on preview, anything else we might have seen. But I will summarize some of the stuff that happened in these two episodes.
Thank you for not commenting on my drink just now.
Oh, yes. Siddhant's dragon fruit smoothie. Barry ends up in prison and finally begins to grapple with the enormity of what he's done. Sally visits home and fails to find a sympathetic ear with her parents. She returns to L.A. to find her career is basically over. She also meets up with Barry to make sure the gang member she killed last season in self-defense has been disposed of, but confesses that she feels safe with Barry as well. Fuchs makes a deal with the FBI to get Barry's confession on a wire, then decides to actually do right by Barry and changes his mind, only to find Barry has decided to go to the FBI himself and makes a deal for a new life with one unknown person he wants to take with him. Gene is finally being celebrated for his actions from last season. He agrees with Janice's dad that he won't talk to the press, but ends up giving the whole story to a journalist via a one-man show. Hank and Cristobal seem to have settled into a good life in Santa Fe, but they realize there is a business opportunity in bringing rival gangs together and shipping sand to construction companies, which they do at a Dave and Buster's. Hank wants to break Barry out of jail to help with this enterprise, but before realizing Barry is going to turn on him and then deciding Barry needs to die. So those are some of the major plot points from episodes 1 and 2. Sidonth, let's start with overall thoughts. What did you think of the first two episodes of the new season?
Look, I'm a sucker for any TV comedy that tries to do anything different stylistically. And so I was in the bag for this pretty much throughout because it's so just it feels like an emotional knife constantly plunging into you. Pretty much everything that happens at this point. It's still quite funny. But with the way Barry has gone, it's. You know, every character seems to be going through just the worst possible time. And that's my kind of television, man.
Yeah.
Misery. What about you?
I enjoyed it. You know, I think it continues to be very solid. I think for a lot of this show, I've been wondering what it is that Barry's trying to say. You know, like Barry the show, not the character. Like what is Barry trying to say? And I think that they finally have settled on at least what the topic is going to be, right? And the topic is going to be, can somebody like Barry be redeemed? That is my sense of where this season is going. And yep. I think the show is likely to have, if not a satisfying answer, at least a satisfying way of presenting its version of the answer. You know, there might not be an answer or it might be conditional or something, but I think it's going to go in some interesting places. So overall, I enjoyed the first two episodes, but we have some specific topics that we're going to discuss. And why don't I start with this topic? Well, actually, you know, before I get to the topics, I did want to ask also, like, any predictions as to where this season is heading? What do we think is going to happen with these characters? Because this is the episode to guess, and later I can laugh at how wrong you/I am about it. So,
okay. I'm pretty sure it's going to be the other way around. I'm going to be the one laughing at you. So, you know, why don't you go first? Because I already have one in my head, but I want to hear what you say.
My guess is, well, first of all, I think that I tried to do this for Beef and I got everything way wrong, but I'm going to try to do this again. I think that Barry is somehow going to get out of jail. I don't know how. I do think that he and NoHo Hank might make up at some point. But I think Barry's going to get out of jail because I think it would be like just not as dramatically interesting if he was in jail the entire season. Like that just feels like a weird place for Barry to end as a show, especially if it's starting season 4 with him in jail. And I do think there will be, if not reconciliation between him and Sally, at least something closer to a shared understanding that they met some of each other's needs. And so I think, you know, we saw a hint of that in this episode, and I think that will be expanded upon in the episodes to come. I also think there's a significant possibility that Barry will end up dead by the end of the series. So Those are just some scattered predictive thoughts. Sidonth, any idea where the season is going? Like, what would you have to guess about where the season's going?
Well, I agree with you that he's probably going to get out of prison at some point, especially with, you know, Hank now wanting to kill him. I do think that specific scenario is probably going to play out similar to what we saw between Fuchs and Barry. Because, you know, going back to what we talked about, the overall question of the show, you know, can people be redeemed? I think Barry as a character has, you know, spent these 3 point whatever seasons so far trying to leave this life behind, trying to redeem himself. But now where the show is, in retrospect, it's starting to feel like all that was for naught. All that was just for nothing. And he maybe he's been beyond redemption or beyond saving since the beginning. But at the same time, Barry as a show and the individual characters on the show and us watching it, we have this instinct to, you know, love cruel and terrible people, kind of the way Sally does. And I think, you know, Hank is probably going to follow that instinct in some way, the same way Fuchs did, because, you know, as much as Hank probably feels betrayed by Barry, I still do think, you know, he loves him in some way, the same way Fuchs does. So I don't know if any of the people in Barry's immediate orbit are going to kill him. I think just based on everything we've seen so far, we may be in for some kind of like Assassin's version of a Goodfellas ending where it's like, you know, he's finally settled down and the past is behind him or whatever. But at the same time, like it's not, this is not something he can move on from, you know, even if Barry gets everything he wants, even if there's no danger to him, even if he settles down with Sally, even if there's no one trying to kill him and he's left, you know, the assassin life behind.
The first two episodes set up forward that he is going to potentially enter witness protection, right? And so, like,
yes, yeah,
and so maybe that's why the Goodfellas comparison, because spoilers, yes, for Goodfellas, yeah, but like that's what ends up happening with Goodfellas, right? So maybe
spoilers for the real life people that Goodfellas is based on.
But even in Goodfellas, when Ray Liotta's character goes into witness protection at the end of that movie, it's not, I don't think it's meant to be like celebratory, like he got everything he wanted, right? It's like,
yeah,
he had to make severe compromises and leave a lot of things behind, including the lifestyle that he loved. And I think that in the case of Barry, you're saying there's a possibility he gets into witness protection, but even then, there will be a great cost extracted from it. And that's even if he succeeds at the witness protection,
yeah,
which like I'm not necessarily willing to grant, right? So interesting thoughts.
And of course, I want to delineate that in Goodfellas, you know, I'm sure Henry Hill would like to be, you know, back in the mob lifestyle. I don't think that's what Barry wants, but the comparison was more for like just the scenarios themselves.
Fair enough. But on This Week in Streaming, we will bring topics that we want to discuss. And let's start with this topic. You know, we've been mentioning like what it is that the show is trying to say. I think Barry is a pretty weird show because this show aesthetically and tonally feels almost unrecognizable from season one. Rather than a lighthearted show about show business that just happened to feature a hitman, this show, Barry, is now a hitman grappling with his humanity. And maybe there's an occasional comedic element here or there. I think it's been a pretty steady descent into darkness. And one other thing I wanted to mention that I didn't write in the show notes enough is that there was the potential for this show to be like a straight up Hollywood satire. It has many elements of that. For instance, season three, like one of my favorite subplots in season three is Sally making the show. It's an amazing show, hugely successful, amazing premiere, and then it's canceled by the algorithm. Like, that is a cutting commentary on the state of Hollywood right now. But I don't feel like that is the main event in Barry. Like, I don't feel like that, like, the show is primarily a Hollywood satire. It has those elements in it, but it is, I think, a character study of this character of Barry. And I think that's ultimately what it has become. So,
yeah.
One of the other things I want to bring up is I was reading interviews about this being the last season and how Bill Hader and the creative team were talking to the head of comedy at HBO and telling them that this is probably the last season. I was thinking to myself, wow, yeah, I guess Barry is theoretically a comedy. Again, these days, I think it has some funny elements, like the Dave and Buster scene in these two episodes were like really very amusing. And the idea of like running a gang meeting at Dave and Buster's, that's like a very funny concept. But I don't think that's what, like, Barry feels now to me at the very most a dark comedy, but mostly a psychological drama that has comedic elements. What do you think about the tone of this show and how it's changed over time, Siddharth?
So I think regardless of whether this was always the plan or they decided to gradually or even suddenly, you know, move things in this direction. I think it feels like a very natural extension of everything we've seen. So I think it's definitely like you compare like an early season one episode where it's mostly like, you know, there's dark things happening, but the tone is very wry. It's very like, you know, lean back and laugh at these people. And now it's like, oh no, get way into their heads and watch right. the torment unfold.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we've seen a natural progression in this direction. And I don't know like how many shows have done something like that, where they have so gradually shifted in style in a way that makes perfect sense. Like the only other recent show I can think of with such you know, wild swings between seasons is Search Party, but that was hardly a show that, you know, gradually or organically changed. It was one where each season was just a different genre.
Yeah, I would say the Vince Gilligan universe, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, those are both shows I would say had much more lighthearted early seasons that then by the end became incredibly serious and dark and upsetting. But even in their heyday, I would never have classified Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul as comedies. Like I would never in their early, you know, so but this, I remember the earlier seasons, like this is very, very funny. And it's like, oh, ha, 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 ha. And he just happens to kill people. Now the show is saying, hey, we're going to make you deal with the consequences of that, right? Like we all had a great time in seasons 1 and 2, but now we're going to see what the human cost of all that laughter was, basically, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like overall it works for you just because of the big swings that it's taking. Is that accurate to say, Siddhant?
Yeah, because, you know, I think back to one of my favorite moments in the first season. It's when Sally is doing, I believe it's the Macbeth monologue, and Barry enters just having, you know, thought very intensely about having, you know, killed his friend. Or does he come from, like, killing his friend immediately? This was a couple of years ago.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, either way, that's what's on his mind. And he comes on stage with his one line, something about the king is dead. And it's devastating. And also, I did want to mention that the shift in the show that I've seen, in a way, seems to mirror, like, the process of, very fittingly, the process of becoming an actor and some of the various, you know, techniques and rehearsal processes that people go through. So in, you know, in early seasons, you have Barry, you know, just starting to, like, you know, tap into, you know, who he is and understand his own thoughts and change the way he approaches things around him. And that's what the show also feels like. It's kind of dipping its toe into this world. But then by the end of the third season, you have entire scenes that play out like Meisner exercises, where Janice Moss's father, I forget his first name, sits down in front of Gene, and they just repeat dialogue to each other back and forth and back and forth. And it's one of the most intense and riveting, you know, scenes I think I've seen. And it's straight out of a Meisner exercise. And this season seems to go basically method, but not in the way that we talk about, like, method in, on, like, social media shorthand, like pretending to be the character. More like in terms of, it's about intense emotional recall. It's kind of like the approach to Barry's psychology is almost exactly what it would have been if this was a show about just a regular guy having, you know, taken acting classes. You know, at this point in his training, he'd probably be sitting in a corner thinking back to, like, some of his, you know, darkest and most formative memories, except now that's happening with a, you know, spiritual crisis.
Interesting. So you think kind of the show, there's a kind of meta element where it is kind of about the process of acting. It does remind me, in season one, I remember, I think one of my favorite elements of the show was the titles of the episodes were, I think they were like titles of the chapters from Gene's book, if you recall correctly. That was one of my favorites. So like, here are the titles of episodes in chapter, season one. Make Your Mark was episode one. But Use It was episode two. Make the Unsafe Choice was episode three. But my favorite was episode seven, Loud, Fast, and Keep Going. Loud, Fast, and Keep Going.
Sounds like, by the way, George Lucas direction.
By the way, is my philosophy for Decoding TV as a podcast enterprise. You know, loud, fast, and keep going. That's the only thing that animates me. So what else? You know, on the note of the style of the show, I'm not bothered by the changes in the show. I do think it's weird. And I think that I saw like a very fractured reaction to the show last season, right? Many people, including myself, were like, wow, this is brilliant. This is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But I think if you wanted to watch Barry to see a comedy, I actually think it's okay that you're disappointed in where the show has gone. Like, it is not very funny anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, it has comedic element. There's a handful of moments that are funny, but like, it is in general very upsetting as a show. And I don't think it's wrong for people to like, think they were signing up for one show and then have gotten another and be disappointed in it. So like, if that's you, totally reasonable reaction in my opinion. But yeah,
I do, however, think that might be like a misreading of the initial seasons as well. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, there were more jokes, this was still like from episode one about a guy who has basically lost the will to do anything except kill people, mm-hmm. and finds acting as an outlet for self-therapy for the fact that he is basically a mass murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, there are funny elements to it, but I think that's, it starts out in a very, you know, spiritually dark place. And what we're seeing now is not a sudden, you know, spiritual crisis. It is the natural evolution of that same crisis. But I do understand that if people were going in with the intention of laughing at something lighthearted, they, you know, that's, I don't think the show was that from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but there's definitely a lot fewer laughs and a lot more like I said, misery. existential
questions about life and the nature of humankind. You know, on that note, my next topic, Siddhanth, is I feel like the show has almost become Terrence Malick-like in its tone and structure, like, and pacing. For instance, we'll often just get introduced to a character or a sequence or a setting with absolutely zero explanation of what we're watching or whether or not what we're watching is something real, imagined, a flashback, something that's from someone else's perspective, real with imagined elements in it. What do you think about the way the show visually plays with reality? Because it's definitely at this point doesn't feel structured like a conventional show anymore.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, the structure and the visual approach is completely different, but I think the Malick comparison, I see what you're getting at. You take something.
Am I way off base? You can tell me if I'm way off base.
I get the instinct because, you know, you take like the beach scenes in Tree of Life where Sean Penn's character is sort of wandering through his past and all these figures from his life are around him. And it's a sort of spiritual image. And you do have, again, a lot of scenes set on beaches and
on beaches, like last, and beyond just like beach stuff. There's this idea, like sometimes Barry feels, and you know, I hate to use the phrase, like a tone poem, Siddhanth. You know, like sometimes there's a typical structure to a lot of TV shows, and this doesn't feel, it's sometimes just like, hey, oh, this is a cool, sometimes Barry just feels like, oh, this is a cool thing. Let's just explore this for a little bit. Let's have a 5-minute shot that takes place in a jail, you know, like, and it just feels very like uninterested in aping normal TV conventions, you know, just kind of like doing its own thing. So,
no, I agree with that. But then coming back to the Malick comparison, where something like Tree of Life, you might have this very free-flowing, you know, camera looking up at the characters and, you know, you feel like you're floating along with it. Because in Malick's work, there is this, I want to say existentialism, but in the sense of like, it captures existence in a very beautiful way. And ultimately, a lot of Malick's films, if not all of them, kind of feel like they're about his relationship with, you know, faith and spirituality, you know, especially his films from 98 onwards. But I think the way that Barry goes about it is completely different, even though the settings of these scenes are similar. Like, first of all, the way the camera approaches it, it's completely still. It's sort of chilling in a way where, you know, even the visual palette kind of matches true. That.
Malick likes dancing with the camera, and a lot of Barry's shots are static, or often it's just like a pan. You know, it's usually there's a lot of pans, Barry camera movement is quite sedate overall, I would say, in a very purposeful way, right? Yeah.
And I think just to boil it down super quick, I think when Malick does it, you can feel the presence of God, but when Barry does it, you can absolutely feel the absence of, you know, benevolence or morality or whatever it is. I think it is completely the opposite. If anything, it does sort of remind me some of the works of Ingmar Bergman, actually. Even though, and this is why last season I started taking to calling the character Barry Bergman. but even though I think something like The Seventh Seal is actually probably funnier than Barry is at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention, like, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a Seventh Seal-inspired scene this season. You know, like, that's where Barry is at this point as a show. So,
yeah.
But, great points on, like, what some of the differences are. So it seems like some elements of the comparison resonate for you, but it's not necessarily the first thing that you think of when you think of Barry's filmmaking style, right?
It actually weirdly is the first thing I think of, just because my association with, you know, reflective, you know, imagined scenes on the beach, like that's, even though a lot of filmmakers have done it before, you have Bergman, Kurosawa, etc. My go-to, the one that stuck with me the most, is Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life, having seen that in the theater when it first came out. But upon closer inspection, it's, I think there are more differences than similarities.
Yeah, no, fair point.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Siddhanth, what are some of the topics that arise in your mind watching these first two episodes of Barry?
Well, I think first and foremost, like, we got to give Sarah Goldberg her flowers, because Sally, I think, is just, she's always been such a captivating character to watch. And, you know, we rightfully talk about how great, you know, Bill Hader is as an actor director, but there's always just something so on edge about Sally.
Yeah.
And there always has been. And she just, you know, keeps getting pushed further and further to her emotional limits. And I think this season, last season, you kind of see, you know, what happens when Sally is pushed past those limits, you know, her explosions and, you know, the way she acts out and all that. And, you know, with, I would say, maybe with good reason. But now that she has gone beyond those limits, now that she has exploded, she's kind of left adrift in like this helpless limbo, you know, with nowhere to like direct her anger and no way to like really reel herself back in. And I know we just talked about this show last week, but it does actually remind me of Steven Yeun in Beef, about the way he, you know, carries his anger with him at all times, even in, you know, scenes where he's not like yelling at someone. But yeah, I think it's you know, a severely underrated performance.
I agree with everything you said about the performance, and one of the cool things about this character is this is not an actor that I'm super familiar with, right? Sarah Gold, like, this is the first thing I really saw her in. And what is great about this performance is it just feels like the performance and the actor are one. You know, like, it feels like this is just that, this character, extremely high strung, trying to make it in Hollywood, trying to survive, making lots of compromises, and in significant portions of the first few seasons, completely oblivious as to what was actually going on, you know?
Yeah.
I just think it's a testament to the performance that, like, I never question it. I never feel like, oh, that's just the actor really straining to do this. It's just like, no, that is just, she is that character. I'm sure Sarah Goldberg is very lovely in real life, but it's just, I can't imagine her being not this, and that's why how good the performance is. So yeah, I agree. She's really great. One thing that I wanted to mention is the character of Gene. You know, last season you got the sense of why this person has been run out of Hollywood because of his ego and the terrible way he treated everyone. In episode 2, he puts on a one-man show for Lon O'Neill. Here's my question for you, based on the glimpses we've seen. Would you pay to see this in person? And if so, what would your review of it be?
Where do you think of this shit? Like,
are you a one-man show type of guy, Siddhanth?
Have I ever seen a one-man show? I actually did. The first one-man show I ever saw was somewhere off Broadway. It was just this one dude reenacting the entire Star Wars trilogy himself.
Wow.
That was worth the money. I wouldn't be opposed to it necessarily. I think, you know, going in the way the journalist does, not knowing the story at hand, sure, I'd be captivated. But for us, the viewers, I think it's very much a case of like, all right, Gene's back to his old shit. He's back to, you know, being self-aggrandizing, back to, you know, white lies and, you know, papering over the truth a little bit. And, you know, he should not be talking about this, obviously, and he knows it. But his instinct is to, I don't want to say his instinct is to perform in the sense of his instinct is to create art, but his instinct is to perform in a way that, you know, suits him and suits his image and suits his needs. What would my review of it be? I mean, he's clearly a capable actor. Like, I've always thought that. Like, you know, he's a bit of a dick, but, you know, Gene is clearly, you know, a capable actor because he's played by a capable actor. I'd have to see more of the show to review it.
I think when I was in high school, I've told this story a few times before, and I will probably tell it again. But when I was in high school, we were reading Hamlet in English class. And my teacher said, hey, there's a section of Hamlet where there's people who are actors putting on a fake play. Remember when Hamlet puts on a little fake play for his uncle? And the teacher asked a question to the class. He's like, hey, how would you ask those actors to portray these characters in the play within a play? And no one knew what the answer to that question was. And he says, if it was me, I would make those actors do as bad of a job as humanly possible. and he's like, why? The reason is because if they do a bad job, it makes the rest of the actors look good. You know what I'm saying? and I do think that Barry has kind of subscribed to that idea where most of the acting you see in Gene's class is bad. Like it's but then it's so bad that you don't question the fact that you're seeing other actors play those actors. It's like who the actors are when they're off stage in the show, Barry, completely naturalistic, believable performances. Who they are when they're on stage, completely unbelievable and ridiculous. And I think this episode continues that trend.
It takes a good actor to play a bad actor. And I sincerely mean that because all the bad performances we've seen, and personally, I don't count Gene among them, but all the bad performances we've seen on Barry, as in like within the world of the show, are bad in such specific and familiar ways. If you spend any time like doing theater or any time like around actors of any sort, you know the ways that people overdo it, the way people underdo it, the way people lean on, you know, intonation instead of emotion sometimes. And I think that's one of the things that captivated me about the show initially, the fact that it was so scarily true to life about actors.
Yeah, yeah. I like the one thing I'll point out is Gene's accent for Barry. I think he has like him doing like a New York, yeah. you know, accent, is, you know, yeah. which is very, very silly, you know, but
yeah.
But anyway, it looked like a good show to me, Siddhant. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably enjoy it. And he clearly had someone like in the lighting booth as well. So he's clearly gone over like the lighting cues with someone. Like there's someone else there that we don't see who's familiar with the beats of the show.
Like, it's been rehearsed. I don't know if that's true, just because I don't think he wants anyone else to know about it. But we'll see.
But the thing is, there are lighting changes.
But I don't know that we know that he didn't do that himself, though. I mean, we do see him later. What I did enjoy is like we see him at the beginning, and then we see him later on, and he's like covered with sweat. That was like a really nice touch, because it's like he's been doing it for a while. But yeah, I don't know, because it was such a – it's a story that he only wants this other journalist to know. He had to go through the whole rigmarole. It would surprise me if someone else was in the booth, but we'll see. Sally saw it, though, so, you know.
I guess just because there is a lighting change in the beginning. But this is not something I was consciously thinking about at the time. It's just in retrospect, was there someone else there?
Right, or... It's a good question. Yeah. It's a good question. Siddhant, I think you had one or two other topics, right, to discuss.
Yeah. So one in particular, you know, we've just talked about the idea of is Gene a good actor? But is Gene a good person? I wonder. And I think I know that's a reductive question, especially for a show like Barry. Or how best to phrase this? Because in comparison to Barry the character, he's obviously much less of a bad guy. He hasn't killed anyone. And the only thing you can say he's guilty of is, you know, having been like a dick to people in the past and having fooled Barry into, you know, being caught and not doing more murder. But so he's comparatively less of a bad guy. But like, what do we think of Gene as a human being, as a person?
I think the show Barry in general is about how we can't escape who we are.
Okay.
You know, the main character of Barry is somebody who murders people and then tries to get away from his past and then finds that that past is difficult to get away from. In the character of Gene, we have somebody who is also an egotistical narcissist who burned all of their bridges. We learn betrayed people, stabbed people in the back, was a jerk to a lot of people, and then tried something. Goes through like a very traumatizing series of events, right? In last season of the show, season three, and then tries to turn over a new leaf. Tries to be kinder, tries to be more open, tries to like atone for some of his previous sins, tries to apologize. And I thought there was a very nice touch in last season of he does make this big apology to his former friend who he iced out. But then the friend says, hey, your apology is meaningless to me because it makes you feel better, but like I still lost that opportunity. So then there is a follow-up of, oh, I need to also put my money where my mouth is and actually hire this person, right? And that was kind of like a nice arc for that character. But this season we see again, it's creeping back. The narcissism is creeping back. The idea that I must be recognized for what I have accomplished is creeping back. And I think that that is something that is – that's what the show is trying to say. Is like that core part of Gene, it can be hard to escape. And it's something that he talks to Sally about in this episode when he says, you know, there's a reason why Barry was able to ingratiate himself with both of us, because – both of us being narcissists, like we respond really well to that kind of treatment. So is Gene a nice guy? People aren't just one thing, but I think would say that there is an inescapable part of Gene that is narcissistic and therefore in some ways self-destructive. You know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
In a different show that wasn't about Barry Berkman, I think he might be the villain. Gene might be the villain. But again, I know I'm approaching this in completely binary terms, which goes against everything you just said, I know. And I want to endorse what you just said. Everyone is watching, listening. David Chen, he's correct. That being said, I think Gene would make a good villain.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
In a show about a narcissistic theater director.
Yeah. Final topic, Siddhant, before we get to our favorite yeah. sections and favorite quotes. I think, did you want to talk any more about Bill Hader's direction in this episode or these episodes or anything about that topic? Or do you think we've covered it?
I did make a separate note about it, but I think we ended up covering it because, again, yeah. I think the one thing that we wanted to talk about in pretty much every note we made somehow comes back to the show's visual style. And yeah. basically, I just wrote about, you know, how I believe that he's established himself as one of the best working directors in Hollywood. And I firmly believe that.
Yeah, totally. Bill Hader. And yeah, and it's cool. It's a cool concept that one dude is directing. Not that he's a dude, you know, that's not great, but like inherently great or anything like that. But like, but that.
Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging your privilege.
That one person is directing the whole season. It makes it feel like it's going to be like a cohesive yeah. vision. And it's very rare to get that in TV, especially. Yeah. So I really like that, you know. Before we get to favorite quotes, Siddhant, you know, we like to end with favorite quotes. I do want to ask if there's just any other favorite sections of the episodes, these episodes that we've watched that you want to mention. There were some really lovely filmmaking flourishes that I just want to call out, you know. Sitting at Dave and Buster's, like the camera panning left, right, and like I think the camera's positioned like right in the middle of the table. So I'm really curious, oh, like what kind of rig they yeah. used for that. You know, probably yeah. something from the ceiling or something. So that was like a really fun section. There is this bravura shot where Barry is in the middle of the desert and a wedding party starts running towards the camera. The camera pans. All of a sudden, we're indoors inside of a wedding. And then you see an alternate version of, I think, Barry and Sally dancing at this wedding. Yeah. Kind of a look at the life they could have had in an alternate universe. I just thought that was an incredible shot. And I'm like, how did they do that? When they're in the wedding, are they actually inside? Is it, you know, are they still outdoors? Did they build a set in the desert? Like, I'm so curious about how they accomplished a lot of these things.
Those were the two that stood out to me the most. And, you know, obviously any like overt flourish like that will, you know, stick somewhere in your brain. But I think, you know, the one at the Dave and Buster's table, I think it makes perfect sense for who Hank and Cristobal are. They are these, you know, these guys were so full of life and energy and enthusiasm that they would, you know, coordinate and rehearse. Because see, the show is about performers at the end of the day. They would coordinate and rehearse a thing where, you know, they go around and like encircle the guys they want to convince and then in different directions and the camera follows them. And I think it's this lovely little, you know, clockwork brush stroke that I think I've, you know, never seen anywhere else just go back and forth like that. Because they even coordinate like where one sentence ends and another begins.
Yeah. That did strike me a little bit weird, the whole Hank Cristobal situation this episode, because the last time I think we saw those characters in season three, they were going through one of the most traumatizing experiences anyone could ever go through, right? If I recall, Cristobal was trying to, they were trying to do like gay aversion therapy on, or conversion therapy on him. And then Hank shoots the guy that was doing it plus Cristobal's wife in front of him. You know, it's like this like holy, like really upsetting scene. And I guess they're just back to normal again this episode. I am curious if this season will deal with the psychological consequences of all the terrible stuff that happened last season to Hank and Cristobal.
And just to finish up, the thing about, you know, the camera going around on the table and catching them in sync, it works so well to contrast with what happens later when the camera finally starts catching them in like isolated shots and they fall out of sync because you know, Hank says something that Cristobal isn't expecting, which is, we need Barry.
Yeah. Yeah. A really chilling moment, you know, and also Hank's been a Barry, stan for many, many seasons. I am curious if this is the season that will finally break that. You know, it does seem like that based on this episode. Oh, hey, here's a thing I didn't even ask you to predict is when Barry says, hey, can I bring someone with me? Who do you think he's talking about there?
Oh, Sally, for sure.
Really? My initial guess was Fuchs. Because I didn't think that at that point, Barry thought that he could get Sally to agree to it. But if it is Fuchs, go ahead.
No, but look at that shot where he sees this image of Fuchs deep in his past, deep in the background, as like, oh, Fuchs has been fucking me up since I was a kid.
And then it's overridden. It's overridden by the Sally dream. Yeah.
And so I wonder, in his imagination, is this a what we could have had thing or what we can still have?
Yeah,
because they're much older in that.
I don't think that works unless both parties consent to it, though. Like, you can't just have, like, if a gang member is going FBI witness protection, he can't just be like, hey, I want to loop in this person against their will to join me. You know, like, I don't know. I don't think it works that way. But
I don't know if you know this, but I don't think Barry's all okay up there right now. Like, I don't think he's thinking this through.
All right. Well, a really bold first two episode debut for Barry season four. We will be discussing the end of the season in 6 weeks. Hopefully it'll be with Sadam. You might be enjoying Mai Tais on a beach in France at that point. So, but we will be covering it regardless. Somehow, whether he's in France or some other way. Before we get to our favorite quotes of the episode, I do want to mention you can find more episodes of the show at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, at decodingtv. And if you are a fan of this show, first of all, do let us know at decodingtv@gmail.com of this podcast and of This Week in Streaming. But also, if you want to support this podcast and make sure it keeps going long into the future, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. Get early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, and much more. All right, Siddhanth, let's talk about favorite quotes from the episode. What's your favorite quote from the episode, Siddhanth, and why?
Well, I actually have two. Once again, I'm just breaking all your rules.
You're killing me.
Right and center.
You're killing me.
I know. So I don't normally watch TV with the intent of predicting what's going to happen. I like to be surprised. I like to let the art wash over me, but this time, I found myself accurately to the word predicting two lines in particular. And I think that's a good thing, because as much as I like surprises, I also like really knowing the character so well and so intimately that I can predict exactly what they're going to say. One was when Hank says to Cristobal at the very end of the episode, "We need to kill Barry." And I think that, again, it just speaks to what kind of character Hank is. You put it very rightly that he is a Barry stan, and you know, he's formed this sort of almost this parasocial relationship with the idea of Barry,
yeah,
as like, you know, a friend who he feels betrayed by, even though I don't know that Barry has ever felt the same way. So that was one, and the other one I managed to predict, which is why I brought up this whole question of Gene, was when Sally was sort of, you know, yelling at him for saying and saying, you know, why didn't you warn me? And she has every right to. Gene responds with, "We're both the victims here."
Yeah.
Which, you know, is technically true, but it feels like, because when I said that to myself, I'm like, oh no, he's going to say that. Because it is just, it's such a wrong thing to say in that scenario to that person. It is one of the worst things you can say in that moment, I think. Just given the circumstances. And the fact that he says, "We're both victims here," what he's saying is like, yeah. You know, I know you lived with a murderer and all that, but like, what about me? And again, it's coming from a place of like, yes, he is a victim, but like, now, really, dude? So that was my other favorite quote.
I had an different interpretation, which is that hashtag Gene was right. You know, like, I think that Sally's trying to blame Gene for not telling her about what's going on, but Gene's like, "Hey, like he got both of us. Like, it's not like I was, I had like a special place of privilege compared to you or anything like that." But I think your interpretation is very valid as well. You know,
yeah. No, I think you're also right in that, you know, it is coming from a genuine place, but I think there's just something about his delivery that's like, you know, a sort of a very like, you know, calm down, hysterical woman kind of thing. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but it just seemed like kind of slimy in that moment.
Mm-hmm. My favorite quote, my favorite quote from the episode is when Barry is talking to Sally on the phone. That whole sequence is excellent. One of the things that Barry does from a filmmaking perspective is it will often hold the camera in a position longer than you think it should. And that lack of editing creates tension, right? Yes. And there's many instances of this. Like, one example is last season when Sally's beating that guy to death in the sound booth, right? Like, it just it stays on that shot for like a really long time. And this episode, it would be Sally talking on the phone with Barry. Like, Sally's talking on the phone with Barry, and then she like takes the phone away from your ear, and like the shot lingers on Sally. And the brain wants there to be a cutback to Barry. You're like, I need to see Barry's, you know, what Barry's expression is, because like you expect it to be, but it holds on Sally the whole time. Or not for the whole time, but for a long period of time. And I think Bill Hader knows how to draw up that tension in the editing, you know, and I really appreciate that. But Barry says, I didn't lie to you. I just didn't tell you the part I didn't want to be true, end quote. And very moving, you know, and kind of a summation of what I think the ethos of this whole series is. So anyway, that's going to bring us into This Week in Streaming. I do want to mention that next week, Siddhant and I will be covering Dead Ringers, a miniseries that's available on Amazon Prime, and that is based off of the David Cronenberg film. So we'll be talking over the film. We'll be talking over the first episode or two. We're still not sure whether we should cover the first one or two episodes. We'll figure that out. In the meantime, we'll let you know what we decide. But that is the next show that we'll be covering right here on This Week in Streaming, part of the Decoding TV Network. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Siddhant, for chatting with me today about Barry episodes 1 and 2. We'll be back next week with Dead Ringers. Until then, goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.